all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
Welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone. I'm the officer of the deck today. We've got some great programs for you. I think you'll find very interesting. We always want to remind you, you can find more about Veterans Radio at its Facebook site or by going to veteransradio.net, where we're on the web 24/7. You can find a lot of our podcasts there as well. We post new ones every Tuesday, so you can get a new story, a new interview, something you didn't know before by going to veteransradio.net. We want to thank our national sponsors, NVBDC.org. That's the National Veteran Business Development Council, the leading veteran-owned business certification organization developed by veterans for veterans. Find them at NVBDC.org or call 888-CERTIFIED. And also Legal Help for Veterans, a veterans disability law firm nationwide. You can call them at 800-693-4800 or find them on the web at legalhelpforveterans.com. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today an old friend to Veterans Radio, Brad Taylor. Brad, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, those who maybe didn't hear it a year ago and the year before that, Brad is today quite a distinguished author. He served 21 years in the United States Army, retiring as a Special Forces Lieutenant Colonel. He had operational requirements in Iraq, Afghanistan, and other classified locations. But along the way, he picked up his Master's of Science in Defense Analysis from the Naval Postgraduate School. He's an undergraduate of the University of Texas. I should have mentioned that. And started thinking, geez, I want to be a novelist. And back in 2011, when he probably started this, people said he was nuts. I'm sure you had a lot of critics, but we're now 9 years later, and over I don't know how many millions of books have been sold, and a lot of different books, one every year it seems. So it wasn't such a crazy idea, was it?
No, it wasn't. But I mean, to be honest with you, I never had a crazy idea to be a novelist. I never thought it would sell. I just always had an idea in my head I was going to write a book. And when I was down here teaching at Citadel, I had a lot of time on my hands, and so I wrote a book. I thought it would just sit on the bedside table. But it did sell, and I'd just come out of the promotion list to colonel, and my daughters are in high school. My next assignment was on a company 2 years to Southwest Asia, and my book sold, so I had to make a decision. And I turned out of promotion, retired, and said, let me see if I can give writing a try.
Well, it's turned out okay. Well, how many millions of books have you sold at this point?
It's over 3 million now.
Well, if anybody needs any proof that these are page turners, I think that's it right there that they've sold. And as I said, the Pike Logan series of books get turned out at least one a year, sometimes two or more a year. Tell us a little bit about the background of the Pike Logan series.
Originally, what I wanted to do was write a story of redemption. Believe it or not, kind of the Rocky theme. That's what I set out to write. But everybody says write what you know, and you know, I was a special forces officer, and so Pike became a counterterrorist commando. And he works for an off-the-books agency called the Task Force, Project Prometheus is official term. And I did that on purpose because I served in a lot of classified units, and I didn't want anybody to say that I was, you know, writing fiction, changing names, but writing about real units. So I created one that anybody working in that world would say, we don't have anything like that. Although people all the time ask me, you know, is the Task Force real? No, it's not. Wish it was, but no, it's not.
Well, in the last 2 years, in 2020, you published Hunter Killer, and the book we're going to talk about today is American Traitor, which just came out here in January of 2021. 2020 was a weird year to publish and promote a book. Tell us a little bit about Hunter Killer.
Yeah, Hunter Killer came about because of the previous book, Daughter of War, where I had a real-world private military company called Wagner, which is from Russia, and they're all over the place. They're in Sudan. They're in Central African Republic. They're in Libya, Ukraine, obviously, Syria, obviously. And there was a story about them going to, when Maduro was having trouble in Venezuela, they sent a company of those guys down there to protect him. And I thought, that's kind of bold. And I keep up on national security affairs. And so I saw that story and started researching, not for a book, but because it interested me. And I came upon the clown fest of the election that was going on in Brazil at the time, where the leading candidate for president was actually in prison for corruption for the car wash scandal, which brought down his whole government. And they discovered the largest oil fields in the 20th century offshore, but they couldn't get out of the ground because the corruption was all through Petrobras, a state-owned oil company. And he had the Wagner guys running around. And I thought, that's enough to make a story. And so I started doing it.
Well, I think that's one of the fascinating things about your work, Brad, and that is you're often writing with sort of one foot planted in reality and one foot over here in, hey, I get a little literary license because I'm writing a novel. Do you set out about to be in both worlds?
Yeah, I always like to ground in reality. There's a lot of real stuff that happens both in Hunter Killer and in all my books, actually. If there's some kind of story that has caught my eye, I'll put it in the book. For instance, American Traitor opens up with an F-35, our Joint Strike Fighter, crashing in the Sea of Japan. It was a Japanese F-35, and it flew into the ocean at 600 knots straight into it, and this was obliterated. And to this day, they don't know why it happened. Nobody knows. It just crashed, and we were petrified that the Chinese were going to send a sub out there to get the technology and all that kind of stuff. So I took that. That's a real story. And the pilot interactions on the pages of that book are the actual radio transmissions. But then literary license was, I said why it wrecked. So there's what I got to use for it.
Well, and you had to dream up a really creative weapon to do it, didn't you?
Yeah, which is basically, I mean, artificial intelligence, China's trying to take over the world, the lead with artificial intelligence, and they're actually winning at that. And we're sort of helping them. But if you could figure out a way, because all the sensors on that plane are run by software, if you figure out a way to corrupt the software, then what the pilot's seeing, he's not looking, at dead of night, he's looking at sensors. He's not looking at the horizon because you can't see anything out of the ocean. And if his sensors tell him he's doing one thing when he's really doing another, he's going to crash.
One of the interesting things about American Traitor is that it focuses on this, maybe it's four squares, it's maybe more than a triangle, of China, Australia, Taiwan, and I guess the U.S. So there's this tension in these countries that I don't think we, sitting here in the United States, fully understand. And you've developed that in American Traitor. Tell us a little bit about what drew you to those four squares.
Well, I'll be honest with you. This story's been brewing for a little bit in my head. Three books ago, Operator Down, I was in Lesotho, Africa, doing research for that book. And the book's about a coup, so I had to see the parliament buildings, the police station, that kind of stuff, prime minister's house, because I was going to write about a coup in the country. And so when I got to the parliament buildings, they were all brand spanking new. They were still being constructed, and they were really nice. And on the fencing outside of the construction was a bunch of Chinese lettering, which I assume said something like, make sure you have a hard hat on or something like that. And I thought, what in the world is Chinese lettering doing in the heart of Lesotho, Africa, this small, tiny nation? And so I asked the guy I was with, and he said, China's building this for us. And I said, what for? Well, just to be nice. And I was like, they're not doing it to be nice. They want something. And that was my first real-world contact with the Chinese Belt and Road Initiative, where it's kind of a loan-sharking operation. They're doing it all over the world, trying to stretch their tentacles out. And it stuck in the back of my head. It didn't have anything to do with Operator Down, so I didn't, obviously didn't even address it. But it stuck in the back of my head, and then China started popping up over and over again. In South Sudan, they're helping them with their oil. They bought the port of Darwin. They own the port of Darwin. They've got leases on all kinds of ports in other countries that they're defaulting on the lease, and then China just takes over the lease. And then, the president of China basically made himself a dictator for life, said unequivocally, I'm not going to pass the Taiwanese question to the next generation. This problem's going to be solved in this generation. And things started building up in my head about there's a story here.
Well, I think it's a huge geopolitical story that it's easy to overlook because we sit in the United States a long way away. We don't see those, hey, China's building this building for somebody. What are they getting out of it? Or they're building this road. And we hear things like this Silk Road, and we don't really understand what China's doing. And I think that's the value of reading a novel like American Traitor by Brad Taylor, is it it sort of infuses this reality of what's going on in a delivery mechanism that will take the time to read as compared to maybe the editorial pages. What kind of reaction are you getting as you tell this story from folks?
Oh, it's getting great reviews. It hit the New York Times list last week, so I guess people are liking it.
Have you gotten any pushback that you're not telling the true China story or the true interaction between China and Taiwan and Australia?
No, because it is. I mean, if anybody's going to push back on it, I'd say show me some proof, because it's definitely. I did a ton of research on it. I read like 5 books on China, and it's definitely what's happening. For instance, you asked earlier about real world stories in the book. There's a Chinese expat. I mean, he's an Australian citizen, but he's Chinese descent. And the Chinese have this thing called the United Work Front Work Department, which they use for the diaspora all over the world. And he ran for parliament. He was a car salesman, ran for parliament. And he won a seat to parliament. And then before he went into their parliament, he finally cracked and said, hey, the MSS, the Chinese Ministry of State Security, which is their version of the CIA, the MSS paid me to run for the seat. Now they're putting all kinds of pressure on me. And that blew up in the news. And then 2 days later, he was found dead in a hotel room. Cause of death unknown. And that's in the book, but it's a true story. I didn't make it up. That actually happened.
Cause of death known, but unstated. And I think that's one of the things when I was reading through this, I guess I didn't realize the level at which the Chinese Communist Party infiltrates into a country, and you kind of make this clear in Australia and in Taiwan. I know you did a lot of research on this. Do you have similar concerns about efforts being made here in the United States or in certain states?
Oh, definitely. I mean, Eric Swalwell's story just came out. I mean, that couldn't have come out at a better time for me for selling the book, but they're definitely doing it. And they do it through the universities. They do it through, they just had a New York City police officer was arrested, and he was working for the MSS. And he's Chinese descent, and his job was to keep track of Tibetan refugees, and that's what he was doing for their version of the CIA. He just got arrested. Had a guy from Harvard just got arrested trying to fly home to China with a bunch of biomedical technology stuff. And they, what they do is they build these cultural centers in all the universities, because universities need money. That's what they want, money, money, money. So when China says, I'll give you X amount of money to build this cultural center, we'll keep it going, and they say, sure, we'll take the money. Well, they put the cultural center in any university, you name it, University of Texas, got one, they all have one. And that's now a base of operations for them to steal whatever they can.
And I think we're slow to waking up to that. I probably heard that story 10 years ago and went, oh, I don't know if I believe it. I believe it today. There's another segment in American Trader that is kind of key. You alluded to it earlier. I want you to expand on it because, again, I think most folks don't think about artificial intelligence or AI and how that's going to impact national security, relationships with adversaries such as China. Talk to us what you learned about, you know, the state of AI today and your concerns over it.
Well, the hard part about AI really is nobody is coming. The technology is growing faster than the ethical considerations are for its use. And the biggest argument that's going on in the Department of Defense right now is we don't want this thing to get so far forward that there's no longer a man in the loop, that you're now sending out a robot that's going to make its own decisions on what to kill. So that's a grand overarching scheme of, you know, some of the problem sets that occurred. But for the Chinese, they're bound and determined to be the leader of AI, and AI infuses just about everything we do. I used iRoomba, a robot, your vacuum cleaner in the book, as an example. Now, that vacuum cleaner, when the first time you turn it on, it bumps into every piece of furniture you have and takes 6 hours to clean your floor. Next time it's less. And by the 40th time, it knows where everything is in a room. Well, it's doing that through machine learning. It's learning what your floor plan is, and then it's saving that floor plan. So, I mean, artificial intelligence is everywhere, and it's getting more and more and more pervasive. And the Chinese know if they can own the capital in artificial intelligence, that's a lot of money. People will buy their artificial intelligence, not ours. And they have an edge against us because for us, we have competition. We've got capitalism. Every company's hiding their secrets and keeping it to themselves because they want to develop the AI. They want to be the company that does it. Well, in China, every single company, by their constitution, has to work for the CCP. So they're all working in unison, pretty much. And the CCP gets the benefits of everything they do. In the United States, it's not that way. The Department of Defense had what's called Project Maven, which is just basically an artificial intelligence laboratory trying to develop this stuff. And Google and others, all their employees went up in arms when they were helping them out, saying, you know, we're helping people to kill, not realizing that that's not the intent of it. It's just to develop artificial intelligence. If you didn't help the Department of Defense, your house would be barren. I mean, a microwave oven in your house was developed because the Department of Defense was looking at microwave weapons. The internet that they're bitching about over emails was invented by the Department of Defense. So there's benefits for it, but they refuse to see it. And so they pulled out of Project Maven, but they don't have any compunction about helping out China.
And that's one of the things that I sort of shake my head at and wonder whether or not the Department of Defense, the State Department, the Office of the President can keep up with China as a competitor in such an environment, or do they have to do it outside the purview, if you will, of the public? As you researched American Trader, did you end up walking away going, this is hopeless, or we're still in a competition, or where did you end up drawing the line?
We're definitely still in a competition. It's by no means hopeless. In fact, we're still the leader, and that's why China spends all their time trying to steal our stuff instead of developing their own. But if we keep doing what we're doing and ignoring what China's doing, they will get ahead of us. And they've made it a stated goal. I mean, the president's come right out and said it. I want to be the leader of artificial intelligence in the world. I mean, it was his Kennedy, I want to land a guy on the moon type statement. And we are not doing that. We understand, the Department of Defense certainly understands what AI represents, and they're working very, very hard to do it. But Silicon Valley, they're doing their artificial intelligence so they can develop Google Glass and, you know, anything they can sell to the consumer. And it's all haphazard and split out between different companies. Nobody's working together on it. There's no moon landing in the United States for artificial intelligence.
Well, in this whole cyber, and you, again, as one of those things touched on in the book, this whole cyber warfare, if you can control the satellites, if you can control the GPS system, what people think they're reading off their devices, you're going to be a leader in it. And again, I, as you went through this and started looking at what China's doing versus the U.S. is doing, it's kind of late to coming to Space Force. Where did that leave you in terms of, geez, this is what DOD better get going on?
Well, I'll tell you, as far as space goes, we're absolutely the undisputed leader of the world on that. China's trying to catch up with that, but there's nobody in the world that can compete with us for space-based platforms, for space-based satellites, or any of that stuff.
This is, I think, about the 15th Pike Logan book, if I have this right.
That's true.
You know, sometimes these protagonists kind of wear their welcome out or they get killed off. What are the plans for Pike Logan?
Well, I do it a book at a time. You know, I give 100% to each book, and I don't give a single thought to the next book, which is good because it makes that specific book very, very good. But then the next book, I'm like, why did I do that? Now I've got to figure out how I'm going to do A, B, C, and D.
No, they are very good. They're very detailed, and that's why we're recommending it to veteran radio listeners. And if you want some of that insight and flavor of what's going on in China and Taiwan and Australia and space, some of this AI issue, this kind of book is going to deliver it to you in a format that you're going to find acceptable. So I have no doubt in my mind you're already working on the next one. Brad, you want to give a little hint, or are we just sticking with American Trader?
No, I actually, and this is once again, I was doing book research for Insider Threat, and I was in Italy looking at the Vatican because that was about an ISIS threat against the Vatican. And I came across this weird organization called the Knights of Malta, and they've been around since the Crusades, and they've been in various different countries. And they have a seat at the UN, they have their own passports, they make their own stamps and currency, but they own no terrain. And I just thought, that is the oddest thing ever. And I've been waiting to use them in a book, and so now I am.
See, one research project leads to another, doesn't it?
They do.
And again, we want to recommend to folks American Trader by Brad Taylor or any of the other 14 Pike Logan books that are out there. The first one was One Rough Man in 2011, if you want to watch the progression of this particular character develop over the last 9 years or so. Brad, I appreciate you taking some time to talk to Veterans Radio today.
Thank you. And if they want to read an excerpt of any of the books, they can go to my website, bradtaylorbooks.com, and there's excerpts of all the books there.
And all of these books, folks, can be found on your favorite online retailer, and to those of you who can visit in-person stores, you'll find them there as well, won't you?
You will, wherever books are sold.
Thanks, Brad. I appreciate the time today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And I want to thank everybody for listening to Veterans Radio today. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800 or legalhelpforveterans.com on the web. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to its podcasts and internet radio shows by going to veteransradio.net. And until next time, you are dismissed.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
Veterans Radio needs you. If you like our shows that are informative, surprising stories, and relevant information on what's happening at the VA and the military, we'd like your support. Individual support of $5 to $50 a month or corporate sponsorship of $1,000 to $10,000 would be welcomed. You can go to veteransradio.net, click on the sponsorship or support tab, pay online, and keep Veterans Radio on the air.